It's time for Aaron and I to get nostalgic as we flash back to law school with Reese Witherspoon's classic, Legally Blonde. We talk LSATs, costume parties, and flex a little on some championship belts we have on the wall. Or a parking lot, as it is for one of us. Look out, Harvard. We're coming for you right now on Movie Briefs.
Your Honor, I object!
And why is that, Mr. Reed?
Because it's devastating to my case!
You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
You got into Harvard Law?
What, like it's hard?
By law, you're entitled. It's called disclosure, you dickhead.
Truth! You can't handle the truth!
What's up, counselor?
Hey! What's up, counselor? What a weird thing to say to another person.
I know, right? When I first became a lawyer, that was one of the things that I was like, I know this person by name, but like, do I just go in and say Brad, or do I have to say... Like, there's no good name for an attorney, as far as I'm concerned. Especially, like, an attorney you don't know. You're not going to say, hey, attorney, hey, lawyer, hey, esquire. It's like, I guess counselor, this is what I can go with. This is the game.
I used to get calls from people who would introduce themselves as attorney John Smith. Hi, it's attorney John Smith. And I get why they're doing it, because they want you to know that they're an attorney, like, for right. reasons for the conversation. But I always just found it to be, like, the most dicky move. Just like, hi, I'm attorney John Smith. Like, okay, like, back down. Well, you're not a doctor, okay?
Yeah, because you know that John is calling restaurants, and he's like, hey... This is attorney John Smith, so I'm going to need that booth available.
Anyway, did you watch any good movies lately?
Nope. Not at all. Is this a movie podcast? Are we supposed to watch something for this?
And we are adjourned. Yeah, no, we watched Legally Blonde.
I did. It was awesome. I hadn't seen it in a while. It was great. It's going to be fun to go back to before we were counselors, when we were, I believe the technical term was candidates for Juris Doctor. Is that what you guys were? I
think Oof, that was... I've never even heard that phrase before.
Did they make cards for you at your law school?
Cards?
Did you guys get business cards?
No.
Business cards.
Wait, they made business cards for you?
Oh, we'll get into the whole thing. Yes. Yeah. It was...
My God. Yes. No. No, I went to law school to buy... It was Bayou Rules. It was Bayou Justice down there. No.
Alligator Justice.
Yeah, Alligator Justice. No.
It was fun to sort of reminisce about law school, because I think anybody who went to law school will tell you that's a good part to try and forget. Like, you don't need to remember a whole bunch of that.
The only times I think about law school are the times where I, like, look back and I think, man, if I went to law school again, I'd fucking kill it. Like, if all I had
to
do was, like, read 100 pages for today and then prove it to somebody, I would kill it, you know? Like,
I think my favorite line in this whole movie is a complete throwaway, and I hate to give too much credit to Luke Wilson, although I do love Luke Wilson.
We all do.
Is when Victor Garber asks him, like, hey, do you think she just woke up one day and decided she wanted to go to law school? Mm-hmm. And Luke Wilson's response was, well, you know, bad judgment notwithstanding, I think she's got potential or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think that's how everybody feels. Like, every lawyer's like, could have done something else.
Yeah, could have done a different thing.
Yeah, I mean,
don't really know why I did this thing. Yeah,
but we did, and it was a lot of fun to sit back and think about, like, all the stuff I messed up, all the stuff I didn't remember, all the stuff I didn't know, and to watch somebody else go through it on screen. So
yeah,
it was good. I love this movie, but I haven't seen it in forever.
Haven't seen it in at least like 10 years, at least.
I know, and it was definitely 2001 when they made this movie.
Oof, yes,
100%.
There are so many things I want to say about Legally Blonde that have nothing to do with the law, but I'm gonna really tamp it down to just talk about the legal stuff.
Hey, this is our show. We can do whatever we want.
That's true, but I mean, there were so many things that I just resisted writing down that I was like, whoa! Like, I forgot all the actors in this movie. Like, it was like, okay, Reese Witherspoon, okay, Luke Wilson, you know, Jennifer Coolidge, yeah, remember. And then I was like, Victor Garber. And then I was like, oh, right, Holland Taylor is in this. Linda Calderoni is in this. Karen Deligny's. She's here.
She's always been one of your favorites.
Always.
No, I did write down in my notes, we will have a brief, albeit very important discussion about Bold and the Beautiful
coming up soon. Okay, all right. So, all right. From the top, we've got Elle. She's a Delta Nu.
Yes.
She is going to dinner with her boyfriend, Warren, played by Matthew Davis, who is just as much of a shitbag in real life as he is in this movie.
Well cast. Perfectly cast.
Perfectly
as a
cast.
Piece of shit human being.
As a piece of living human shit. They're going to dinner, and she thinks she's getting proposed to, and instead he dumps her because he needs to marry a Jackie, not a Marilyn. Did you have this thought when you were on your way to law school that
I had the same question written down for you, which was, you being told that you were a Marilyn, not a Jackie, what made you go to law school? Because it was not what made me go to law school.
The idea that anyone would think of me as a Marilyn or a Jackie is ridiculous to me. But the idea that I would be a Marilyn and not a Jackie is even more ridiculous. I guess he wants to be like the president or whatever is his thing. He's got like pedigree.
Yeah, he seems to have that classic rich kid ambition of, if I don't do anything, I'll get a lot of power someday. Yes. Which has seemed to pay off for many people. That is a pathway.
Matthew Davis being one of them. So
100%.
Good job, friend.
Parlayed this right into Blue Crush. Classic.
Vampire Diaries. Go for it, bro. Live your life. But he does say one thing that I did way too much research on.
I'm just going to sit back. You just look excited. I'm just going to stretch.
I'm sorry. He said, if I'm going to be a senator, this is the words, by the time I'm 30, I'm going to need to marry a serious lady. Which got me thinking, you have to be 30 to be a senator.
You do.
That's what it says in the Constitution. Does it mean that you have to be 30 by the time you certify to run to be a senator? Or by the time you're elected? Or by the time you take the oath? What do you think?
Excellent question. What do I think? I think by the time you take the oath.
Mm. And you would be correct, Cole. But
Boyard,
in
yes.
1818, John Eaton ran for Senate.
You gotta stop doing
how
this when
that
I'm drinking.
Drink of juice? You did it to yourself. In 1818, John Eaton ran and won and took his oath at 28. No one noticed. In 1934, Rush Holt ran and won and deferred his oath until his birthday, and his opponent, Hatfield, challenged it and lost.
So Eaton was a senator at 28. He took the oath. He did the whole deal.
Yeah, he did. No one like noticed. Like no one
got
like looked in the Constitution and was like, wait a minute. So he remains America's youngest senator, even though it was illegal. And our own, by the time this comes out, President Joe Biden was elected at 30 years old and 1 month. He took his oath. And at 30 years old and 1 month, he was our sixth youngest senator. So there have been six senators that have been younger than 30 years old and 1 month. Isn't that nuts?
The way I heard that, and I know that it was wrong, was like that Congress. He was the sixth youngest senator. I'm like, what kind of Congress
no,
was
no,
this?
No, no, no. In history.
Years
in history.
In history. Yeah. Gotcha.
But
that's
anyway,
crazy.
When Warren said that, I was like, how many 30-year-old senators could we have possibly had in our time, you know? And it turns out like a lot, I guess.
Way more. I would have guessed zero.
Yeah, I would have guessed that like one, been... you know, like one, you know.
And it would have been 1818 or something.
Yeah.
Crazy shit happened in the 19th century. We don't count that.
Yeah, well, people died earlier, so you had to accomplish things younger. Right. Now we can kind of chill for a while, you know?
I thought so, but now I feel lazy.
Same. Well, I found out Joe Biden was a senator at 30, and I'm like, ugh.
But as you mentioned, this kicks L into thinking, hey, I should just go to Harvard Law School. So before we get more into her path, why did you go to law school? I gotta know.
No fucking
clue. I don't think we've ever really talked about
this. No, we haven't. Well, I feel like when you were in law school and I was in like my last year or few of college was kind of when like we didn't talk all that much.
Well, I wasn't in law school until 2009.
Oh, okay. Then we were in law school at the same time, right?
Basically, you were a year ahead of me.
Yeah, I just feel like we didn't talk that much. Like maybe like every 6 months or so we'd like call each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, you know, in college, I really got into environmental science, and also I was a political science major. And so I was doing this kind of like environmental policy and international relations and like resource scarcity track. And I thought maybe I should like go be like a public policy environmental sort of something. And then I thought the best way to do that would be law school. And also, you know, I did the speech thing.
Right.
I did win that national speech championship. And so I thought, how should I?
Flex corner with Aaron.
No, it's just no, it. I just, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that national speech, speech and debate championship totally that understand. I did win.
It's funny that you mentioned that because I'm going to be mentioning a championship of my own as this podcast goes on.
Oh, really? Like a
oh yes okay but please continue.
Okay, all right, I don't even want to guess, but anyway, so I thought, oh, this right is what there. I'm good at, I'm good at like talking, so this will be like I'll be great at law school. And boy, did that C in torts really kick me down that first semester.
fucking torts, contributory negligence gets everybody.
I really thought I had it too. I was like, yeah, I'm negligence, I got it, there's four things, blah, 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 done, you know, like I thought torts was my easiest subjects. Turned out I didn't know shit about it.
My torts professor was, my favorite because he was the most realistic. He was like, come to class, don't come to class, I don't give a shit.
Well, that's nice.
Secondly, he did the thing I hate the most about law school professors is he gave one of those tests where it was a four-hour exam, but he said, you'll never finish it.
Oh.
There's like 95 torts in this fact pattern, and you list the torts. So you're like, okay, you're racking up points, right? So is it better if I just go and find all the, am I getting a point for all the torts, or mm-hmm. do I need to go concentrate on the five or six biggest torts and really flesh out
right.
all the rules and show the knowledge of how to analyze those. And so torts, yeah, that was just one of those exams that is burned into my memory of like, this is 100% how to not test people about their knowledge.
Well, mine, I got the C, I got A's and everything. Without torts, I would have been like the law review girl, right? So I was like pissed right. at this torts grade. So I went in to look at my exam to see what I did wrong. And usually there's like points and like minus one, plus one, burr, 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 all over your right. exam. And there's nothing, it's blank. I'm like, did I not score any points on the exam? So I went to the professor, I'm like, what's going on? Did I not score any? Like, am I this bad? And he's like, no, I don't really do points. I just kind of like read it and get a feeling for what the grade should be. And I was like, fuck off.
Sure.
Like, come on.
So
anyway.
So your law school had grades, though.
Yeah, we did have grades. Harvard doesn't. That's weird.
Harvard doesn't have grades.
No grades for Harvard.
No grades.
They just kind of get in. Like, we got graded. And then they just kind of coast.
Yeah,
that.
I went ahead and looked up some Harvard law stuff
yeah?
because the Harvards, the Yales, a lot of these schools that are, you know, the best lawyers in the world, highly competitive, all this stuff,
mm-hmm.
They get H's, P's, LP's, or F's.
Yeah, okay.
So you just do a test or you do a brief and they'll say it's an honors,
mm-hmm.
it's a pass, it's a low pass, or it's a fail.
Sure, cool. Good job, guys.
Yeah.
I don't... Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
That's great stuff.
Clearly, my respect for Harvard and Yale is not.
So when I hear people like, I graduated with honors from Harvard, good.
Like, okay, I got B's too. You know what?
Yeah, I don't know what that means. Yeah.
This kind of ties into where Elle's talking about, like, okay, I want to go to Harvard. And she's talking to her guidance counselor and saying, this is what I want to do. I want to go to Harvard Law. And she's like, you're a fashion merchandising major, you know. That even though your grades are great and your extracurriculars are great and you could get a great LSAT score, you're not going to go to law school. And the fact of the matter is they don't give a shit whether you're a fashion merchandising major.
No.
They give a shit who your dad is, who your brother is, what you're going to buy at the, like, what kind of money you're going to throw at them. Like, Elle's problem is that she doesn't know any other lawyers.
Yeah. If she could have had somebody writing her.
Yeah.
A recommendation or making a call.
Yeah, she doesn't know any congressmen is her problem, not that she's into
yes.
fashion.
It's very funny because I think we can all tell that in the last 4 to 5 years, Harvard has had, and Yale's had just a great run of spectacular public alums.
Oh, yeah.
Really show a mastery of both the Constitution and legal concepts.
Yeah, totally. Uh-huh.
Good Lord. I don't know. I think that might be my most tweeted phrase is like, proud day for Harvard. I think that is the one I go back to all the time.
Yep.
But yeah, and also Harvard Law School, my last little bit of curiosity with them. was how big their incoming classes are. Like, how big are their classes?
Oh.
How big was Tulane?
I want to say our graduating class was, oh, God. I don't want to get this wrong. For some reason, the first number that came to my head was like 200-something-something.
Okay, because I know our incoming class, they tried to seat each class at like 140 to 150.
I want to say we were over 200.
They have 560 students per incoming class. They do seven sections of 80.
Wow.
Is how they split that up. So, another proud day for Harvard. Anyway.
For some reason, in my mind, I remember saying out loud to people, we graduated 285 students and nine had jobs at graduation. Like, I remember that sticking out in my brain about the year 2011 and how shitty it was.
And it wasn't a ton better in 2012,
I can tell you that. No, but better than 2010, you know?
Oh, of course. It was on the upward swing. 100%.
Yeah.
We had 140 or 143 or something when we started, and I think we probably lost maybe 10 or 12 people throughout the term, because one of the things as an Illinois school was happening, I don't know if it's happening still, but you could come to Illinois and it only took you 6 months to establish residency.
Mm.
But even if you weren't, if you went to a Wisconsin school, if you went to a Wisconsin State school, Wisconsin would not make you sit for the bar if you stayed in Wisconsin. So you would have people go cheap school in Illinois and then transfer up.
That makes sense.
To Wisconsin and finish out and not have to do the bar. So our class ended up sort of getting bizarrely smaller as we got closer to graduation, because people were like, I can work in Wisconsin. Like, that's fine.
We hemorrhaged some people because it seemed like Tulane Law is one of the few civil law schools in the United States, because, as you know, Louisiana practices a whole different Napoleonic code, European style laws. So we get a lot of international students that end up leaving or transferring out to internet, like just going for some experience and then leaving to other countries, or just kind of not being able to handle law school in another language, you know, which I certainly could not. And we also have like a crazy amount, for some reason, a crazy amount of like trust fund kids, like just a lot of people who do not need to go to law school. And it's kind of like astounding that you're here when your dad's a billionaire. And then they realize like, oh no, what I would like to do is party. I don't know why it's so much.
Yeah, I wanted three more years of law school
or
I wanted three more years of college.
Yeah, this is not what I thought that it would be. You know, because it's in New Orleans, so I think a lot of people are like, I'm just going to go party and,
So, what made you go to Tulane? Was that a top choice for you just because maybe the environmental, they do more environmental stuff down there?
It was in the top 10 for environmental law programs, but of the top 10, it was the best. In the top 10 of environmental law programs, it was the best school overall. So, if I ended up deciding I didn't want to do environmental law, which I did, then it was still a good school on paper, which some of the other smaller, like niche environmental law schools wouldn't have looked good if you wanted to go do a different field.
Sure. Yeah, I've had a couple of friends that wanted to do environmental law. They go up to Lewis and Clark, which is, you know, like the number one environmental law school, but I've literally never heard anybody from Lewis and Clark not basically go into environmental
law. That was my fear, is I'd graduate from Lewis and Clark and then want to do, I don't know, contracts or something, and everybody be like, where's this law school? What is this?
Yeah, we like, when we made the choice, I had been working for 3 years. I had moved out to California and was just working at an engineering firm. I had no business having the job that I had. I was just a project manager, and it was the most boring job I've ever had.
Yeah.
I could even imagine. It was awful. And this is no shade to engineers. It's just not what I studied. I was a political science major. I just needed some money when I moved out to California, because it's a touch more expensive than my apartment in Peoria.
Mm-hmm.
So took the job, got super bored, and then decided I wanted to go back to law school. And at the time, Jess was finishing up her Teach for America term. And so she was like, I had deferred law school because she applied to law school out of undergrad. And we both were like, well, let's go to law school. So we applied to a bunch of different places, but we were getting married. So when you came to our wedding, we started law school like a month after that.
I remember that.
And so it was a lot about like, well, we're married. We don't want to be away from each other. We thought about, well, if you get into this school and I get into one that's 100 miles away, we can, I guess, live in the middle or whatever it is. And then SIU accepted us both and made it super cheap for us to go. Because that was our decision on law school, was we're paying for two of us. Like, it's an absolute financial decision to make. Unless we're going to get into Harvard's, which I'm not a Harvard, Yale, Columbia.
I don't know any congressmen.
No. the Williams family fortune will not buy, you know, a book, let alone mm-hmm. a library at yeah. Harvard. So it's not going to happen. So we went there, and as soon as we checked, ABA accreditation means that I can take the bar back in California. Cool. So that's why we went there. And honestly, I loved it there. It was great. And I had no clue what I wanted to do. It was a great campus to be on. It worked for practical purposes because when I clerked with people who were coming from your top 25 schools that focused way more, it seemed, on theory and a little less on practical skills, the writing difference was there. You could see it. It was just like, I don't, this is not a memo. I don't even know what this is. I'm so confused. Where are the facts of this case? So I was very impressed with SIU. I loved it there. We both loved it there. So
the thing is, wherever you go to law school, you're going to get the same education. You're going to get books. Just Southern Illinois is Tulane, is Harvard, is Yale, is everywhere. They're all the same. They're all the same.
How much did you recognize the books in this movie?
Yeah, the same books, the same teachers. I mean, you've got to graduate top of your class from an Ivy League school if you want to go be a law professor pretty much anywhere. So it's like, it's the same people. Like, it's such a fucking racket. It is such a racket. The tears and the, it's ridiculous. And when I say tears, I don't mean like crying tears. I mean like tears like one, two, and three. It's ridiculous. I got the same education as you for probably, I don't know, a lot more dollars. And I didn't know that. You know, applying to law school, I was like, oh, I've got to go to a top-tier school. I have to go to a top-tier school. And that it meant nothing, literally nothing.
I TA'd for the last 2 years of law school in the legal research and writing program. And so we would get freshmen, or I'm sorry, 1Ls. They would come in and we would teach a couple classes at the beginning, but we would basically be there to help them with the writing. We'd have office hours, all that stuff. And the amount of questions we would get from 1Ls be like, should I transfer to Marquette? Should I transfer to DePaul? Because it's you know, a better you know, ranking. And I'm like, unless you are going to transfer to a top 10 school or something that will just absolutely explode off of your resume. And by the way, be very good there. Don't, you know, you have to be good there. No, get your education. I mean, Marbury versus Madison means the same thing here as it means at Columbia.
Yeah.
So, you know, we would have, and we all had friends that were in different law schools, and, you know, we had friends at Washington and Lee and Wash U and St. Louis and these, you know, these other good schools. You read the same cases, you share the same briefs.
Same stuff, same caliber same professors, exactly the same.
Yeah, it's the same shit.
All right, so to get into law school, Elle Woods needs a, well, to get into Harvard, she needs a 175 LSAT. Well, let me ask you this. It is high. When you applied to law school, did you do a video essay or did you go ahead and write one?
Well, it was funny. I was going to do a video essay or I was going to do a topless essay. So what I did is I just did topless, but I wrote it.
Oh, really?
So I didn't really get to see. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you just
so
wrote
I was
it
in my swimsuit while I wrote it.
Oh, okay.
I footnoted that so they knew that it was there,
so
but there's no pictures or anything.
So it was infused with the sexual tension
of Elle Woods' video.
Yeah, okay. All right. Good, yeah, good, good.
Absolutely.
So she needs a 175. So you see her, like, preparing for the LSAT and, like, studying for the LSAT. Did you take an LSAT prep course?
So, funny story. Jess and I were trying to, I don't want to say trying to take it seriously like we weren't, but we were working full time. So I didn't have a part-time working at the movie theater job. I had a 40 to 60 hours a week like actual job that I had to do. And so we signed up for one and didn't go, really, is what it came down to. When it came down to leave work that I have to do to get money to pay my rent or go to a prep course, I just couldn't do it. So no, the answer is no. How about you?
I literally didn't know they existed. Like, I feel like you were a little older when you went to law school. I went right out of college. I just feel like my experience just generally was so podunk. Like, I feel like I didn't know any lawyers. I didn't know anything about getting into law school. I didn't know anything. I just knew I needed to sign up for the test. And so I just showed up for the test. I think I got one of like a LSAT for dummies or something and read it and was like, okay, I get it. This is to this as that is to that. I know how to do these. And I showed up to the thing. I didn't know anybody there. Like, because no one I knew from my college was going to law school. None of my friends were going to law school. So I just showed up and everybody was like talking about their prep courses, and everybody had like friends and stuff, and everybody had these books, and I was like, oh no, like I really messed up. And I asked somebody like, hey, you know, what was the prep course and stuff? And it was like 6 weeks, and like I was like,
right,
oh,
yeah,
fuck
I didn't
me.
Know.
I'm gonna do terrible on this. Did I tell you about the girl next to me in my LSAT test?
Uh-uh.
She had a baby. There was a girl next to me. Wait, no. That was my bar exam. We'll do that later.
Oh, even better. Okay. Yeah, we'll have a bar exam.
I sat next to a woman in labor in the bar exam. And I was so pissed at her the whole time.
At least it was the Illinois bar exam.
I didn't know she was in labor. And I was just like, if this bitch does not stop grunting during this test, I'm like, leave or don't. And then turns out she like walked out the building and like a baby fell out. It was in the newspaper. I was like, oh, okay, all right.
Ma'am, either you need to reduce your groaning or massively increase it. But the level of groaning you're at now is actually distracting
to
me.
The looks I was giving to this poor woman could have set her on fire. And I feel like a real big, like I wish I could track her down and be like, I'm sorry, but I can't.
That's on me.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So she gets a 179, which, you know. That's
very high. It's out of 180 for
good,
those of you out there that don't
good
know.
Good job,
180
Elle.
Is
that's
the top.
How she got into law school.
Yep.
But they you see them talking about her like, oh, she's a fashion merchandise. No one cares what your major is to get into law school. No one cares.
No. And by the way, if you're out there and you're in college right now and you're thinking, I need to be a political science major or some other,
no, you don't.
You know, whatever major, there is no major that is perfect for law school. It's a different skill set. I had math majors that were fantastic and political science majors that were terrible as far as like writing and analysis and everything. So they don't care. If you got 179 on your LSAT, so many schools are just sending you bags of cash
yeah.
to go to their law school.
Please, please. Like, it doesn't surprise me that she got into Harvard with a 179.
No.
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 But I had friends in law school who were pilots who were aviation majors. And there's all kinds of... don't worry about that. Go to law school if you want to go to law school. Right. All right, what do you have next? Oh, I know what I have next. She gets to law school and she moves into some kind of dorm?
Well, she moves into some sort of, like, a dorm, but, like, also a three-floor walk-up or something.
Like, But it's, like, all law students in there.
Yeah, I didn't have that at SIU.
No, I think we had some student housing for some international students. I think it was in conjunction with, like, the undergrad. Like, they lived in, like, the student housing, like, the nice student housing for undergrad. Like, there was some kind of a way to do that if you were from another country and didn't want to live off campus.
We had some apartment buildings that some buddies of mine lived in that were all students lived in them, but it was not a dorm run by the university.
No, in the law school, no. Why would you do that? Why would Elle Woods live in a...
Yeah, well, how is she not just getting an apartment somewhere?
She should get an apartment somewhere. She's super
rich.
She's
in Beacon
Hill.
You
saw her parents.
Yeah, she's in Beacon Hill with an apartment. I actually love... That was one of the things I loved about SIU, though, is Jess and I moved into this really nice apartment, like on a pond. It was the idyllic sort of setting for, you know, Wrigley to just go swimming in the pond. We're doing homework. Like, it was just fantastic. Mm-hmm. No traffic. Like, coming from California to Carbondale, no traffic. Spectacular.
Wrigley is the name of a dog and not a child. I want everyone to know.
Yes.
Here's what I just don't want anyone thinking you named a child Wrigley. That's what I don't want.
I understand. Oh, I appreciate the cover. This is friendship.
Sure. All right.
We were going to get emails about that. Like, what's Cole's problem?
I was going to get emails.
Oh, okay. So you mentioned, you know, obviously her show up with all this, you know, shout out to Beacons for buying some ad time. But she moves in and goes to check in and all these things. And one of my, this movie gets a lot of shit accurate, in my opinion, about law school.
About law school.
Yeah, not about law.
Not about law.
But about law school.
But law school, sure.
And one of the things they nail is that, sort of meet your little group and try to socialize and meet the people. Oh, just aces with douchebag in the hat who's, you know, Stephen Hawking stole his fourth grade paper. You have people who think they are so brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get it because you're all sitting there. Like, we're at the same school, yeah?
Yeah. We all got here, right? Yeah.
So we're good, right?
Yeah.
And you know, you got people who are socially awkward. You just have this. To me, going back to law school was way more like going to high school than it was going to college.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. There were absolutely cliques in law school immediately. And it in my law school, I feel like it came down to kind of like the rich kids and the not rich kids and the non-traditional people. Like, okay. It was like the oldies, like people who were old. We had like an 85-year-old woman in my law school class.
Oh, that's awesome.
We had a lot of older people. And then we had a lot of people who were just like colossally wealthy, like wealthy in a way that you can't really imagine it. And then there were like kind of the rest of us, which was kind of like the smarties and then like the stoners and just kind of like the rest. Like,
right.
And that was my group. And it was kind of hard to find. I eventually, you know, found my people. But yeah, I mean, it was a lot like high school. I got made fun of at one point for wearing Gap jeans. Like, I remember this really mean girl was like, we were talking about something, we were kind of in an argument, and she's like, well, at least I don't wear Gap jeans. It's like, wait a minute.
Yep.
These are my fancy pants.
You don't understand how far we have to go to get to a Gap.
For these. Yeah. She broke up with her boyfriend by calling him a state school piece of shit. And I was like, what? And I remember asking him, like, where did you, what was the state school? And he's like, Penn State. I went to Penn State.
Oh, God. Yeah. That's fantastic.
So just a lot of, like, elitist bullshit going around. Like,
at SIU, we had a lot of, you know, obviously there were a lot of local people from Southern Illinois and, mm-hmm. you know, just going straight in from undergrad, which was not my experience. But we had sort of the jock bros that were going to law school.
Mm-hmm.
We had the my mom or dad is a lawyer crew,
mm-hmm.
which I think those people, even more so than the I think I'm smarter than I am people, drive me crazy.
Yeah.
My dad's a lawyer. My mom's a lawyer. Like, I know that this is right. And I'm just looking at it going, it is not right. And if they did it, if they did your homework, which is what I think happened, this isn't correct. And I'll tell you what, if this wins a motion over in Marion, Illinois, that's great. But I can tell you that if you hand this to the professor, you're going to get a bad grade.
Yeah.
So you just do with that what you will. But yeah, we had these, it was the popular kids, the, you know, like you said, the stoners, the party crew, what it was just walking in at 26 years old, by the way, I had not been in formal school for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, where the fuck am I at? Yeah. We had lockers at SIU. There's lockers.
Lockers? No, I don't. Yeah, we had lockers. We had lockers at Tulane. Yeah.
So
yeah,
you got your locker assignment. We're all in the same class. There were two sections of 70 people. So you're that first semester, for those of you who don't know, you had the same four classes with the same 70-ish people, or at least I did. And you just kind of go in this block.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm seeing the same people for every class. And it's just absolutely high school versus college. Like, there's people that were in classes with me I've never seen before. I never knew.
Yeah.
Never talked to. It was such a shock to like my conscience of, I'm sorry, did I just get asked if somebody was dating someone else? Did that just happen to me?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Which the dating thing. Oh yeah. It was like so and so has a crush on so and so. Like, oh yes. Man. Yep. It's
so if you want to go back to high school and relive high school without being creepy, go to law school.
Yeah.
There was, I wanted to ask you this question too, just because we're at the part of the movie where she's just getting there. And so I feel like so much shit happened in the first 2 weeks of law school, getting acquainted, getting your feet wet. Was there anything that someone, I get better question. When you got in or decided you were going to law school, did you ask anybody for advice about what you needed for law school?
I feel like I didn't even know who to ask. Like I was searching the internet for like, what is law school? How do law school? And I didn't even know. I mean, the answer to that is no, because I had no idea. Like, I knew no one who had been to law school. And so.
Well, and neither one of us. I mean, we were both in the same boat. You were the person I knew that went to law school. Yeah. Evan. Yeah. But we don't come from families of lawyers. We don't come from, I mean, I won't speak for your folks, but like my folks, I don't think had any close friends that were lawyers or anything like that.
My mom was a paralegal for 30 years or whatever. So she would be like, I can hook you up with my boss who, you know, but that's weird. Like, I don't know them. Like, you know,
right.
They help me a little bit in the admissions process. Like, this is what law schools are looking for, but it's weird. It's your mom's boss. Like, I don't know this guy, you know,
sure.
I just didn't. Yeah. I just felt like I'll just buy some notebooks and that's fine.
Yeah. Well, I felt like I'm getting to the end. I think you are too. the end of our sort of gestation period of being able to give advice about law school.
Sure. Because
it's only good for about 10 or 15 years.
Right.
And then after that, it's like, I went to law school too long ago. It's not going to be the same. Because right. I was told by the one person I talked to, and thankfully, like, my mother-in-law was a court reporter for years mm-hmm. and years. So she was like, you can talk to this person. Mm-hmm. And it's the same sort of awkward conversation, cold call, like, I don't know you, but also I haven't been in school. So I did find out I lost all of my note-taking skills, test-taking skills, you know, sure. being like, how to time out a test and all these things. Mm-hmm. But I was told, oh, you have to have a Black's Law Dictionary.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh shit, well, I guess I gotta have a Black's Law Dictionary. Yep. And so I bought one, and nothing is cheap, by the way. Like, no book in law school is cheap. And so I bought one. I'm like, cool. I put it in my backpack, which I now owned again, and walked into class, and I like have my Black's Law Dictionary. And like, the first thing they do to you when you go to law school anymore is like, here's your Westlaw password that yeah. is free. And you're like, oh, so I don't need any of this.
Cool.
Excellent. So I would say the Black's Law Dictionary is the thing I was told that I needed.
And the heaviest thing that you didn't need, too.
Yeah, definitely didn't need that. But what I did need was a really good laptop, which I did not have or no. even think of.
I had a laptop that if it wasn't plugged in, it died.
Yeah, same thing.
So there was no way for me to have it in class. I couldn't have it in class. It only existed in my apartment. So I was the, I think, only, like Elle Woods, I think I was the only hand note taker yep. in most of my classes.
No, both Jess and I were like blown away first day because I came in and I'm like ready to handwrite. And, mm-hmm. you know, you had that moment where everyone opens laptops and you're like, that's probably a good idea. But mine, like yours, if you couldn't sit next to an outlet, mm-hmm. then I couldn't have it on. And so that was, I think, our big purchases right after law school started, because all your tests are on a computer. I remember borrowing a computer for a semester from the computer mm-hmm. lab because my computer could not sustain an exam. So for those of you guys out there, I think this is probably still good advice. Get a really good laptop.
Yeah.
And don't worry about Black's Law Dictionary. That's a waste of your money.
I'm a person who learns by handwriting notes, so it ended up doing really well for me. When I eventually did get a good laptop and bring it to class, it was only for GChat. Like, I only brought it
to class. Oh, GChat was huge.
To snark yes. on others.
Absolutely. No, once you find your crew, then it becomes...
asking questions, yeah.
It becomes highly important to get GChat and start making fun of basically everything.
Yeah.
So I would be remiss before we get back to the movie to not talk about the types of people that were in law school. We obviously talked about the cliques, but we got to talk about gunners. I feel like you can't talk about law school without gunners. Did you have a big gunner?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. What was her name? Duplantis. Mm-hmm. And we had a professor that had like a real thick Cajun accent that would be like, Miss Duplantis, like would just kind of like shriek every time he said her name. And talk about how ridiculous all her questions were. But she's like, I think she's extremely successful now. So not somebody to make fun of anymore. But yeah, ask so many questions.
Yeah, gunners, I think, get a bad reputation, and they should, because it's fucking annoying. And if you want to have a private conversation with the professor, that's what office hours are for. That's always yes. my complaint. Like, you want to have this fucking debate, go. Don't waste my 50-minute class or my hour and a half long class. Make office hours and go to the professor and have this debate. But
if gunners, it's going to be on the test, they're not going to not say it.
Right.
So just let them say the information that they plan to say. Don't hijack 40 minutes of the class, because then they're going to not right. say some of the information that they had planned to say that is going to be on the test.
The pain in the ass about gunners, too, isn't just that they ask the questions or they're always raising their hand or whatever. They're usually highly prepared. The gunner in my class, I'm sure he's a good lawyer. Like, I'm not. I know the people in my class that are shitty lawyers. He's not on that list of people right. I think were no. really bad at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, he also thought 3 weeks into law school, like, I'm already ready to be a lawyer. I'm smart enough to, like, I know everything. I know all these things. But he would ask questions about, like, footnote 4 in this case. It's like, mm-hmm. no, we're not. Oh, don't do this. Stop it. So don't be a gunner. Be prepared. Know your shit. Don't be a gunner. Right. Nobody likes yeah. it. We had one so bad that a friend of mine and I would keep score in class, and we would leave class yeah. to be like, how many, we called them Chuck Fucks. How many Chuck Fucks did we get? in this class, and he's like, I had 17. I'm like, I had 22. So yeah, it's probably somewhere in the middle. Yeah,
I was like, I would be awful. So scared to ask a question. I'd be like, okay, I feel like I really have a question. Like, and then I would like screen it in my mind. Like, is it a good real question? Yes. And I remember in criminal law, we were talking about vehicle searches versus home searches and how they were different. And my question was, what if you live in a trailer? Right. And I asked the question, what if you live in a trailer? What if you live in a trailer park? And I was like, this is a good question. Like, this is something that could be on the exam. This is, I'm good at this. And the professor was like, well, if it's a stationary, like double wide trailer, that's going to be a home. And I'm like, but what if it has wheels? What if you live in a trailer park with wheels? And they're like, well, if it's mobile and you can roll out, that's going to be a vehicle. And I said, what if you bury the wheels? Because some people do in trailer parks, they bury the wheels and roll it into like a hole. And the professor was like, why would you bury the wheels of your vehicle? And I'm like, because you live there, and also for tornadoes. Because it's true. And
yep, just flexing on where you're from. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's how in my first 2 months of law school, I was labeled very quickly trailer trash. Like, wow, she knows a lot about what goes on in the trailer. Like, the whole class laughed at that. And I was like, oh, no, I've made a critical error. Like, this is...
I never want to talk again.
Then I never asked another question ever again. That was it. That was my big question. And then I was done. So Elle is in her first class of law school. Everyone has a computer but her. She has a heart-shaped notebook and a fuzzy pen.
And she's wearing a smoking jacket. Let's not skip that she decided to...
Is this the tie and the smoking jacket combo?
Yes.
That's rough. It's rough.
Bold move.
I think there's a dog there, too. And sometimes when she's in class, there is a dog.
Which is a higher than average amount of animals you will find in the typical law school
class. It is. It is one more dog than anyone else is allowed to bring to class.
Yes.
So, and then she gets Socratic-ed.
Yes. Socratic-ed.
Socratic.
So we've all had that professor.
She's like the first one that gets called on, right?
Yeah. Yeah. She gets, I think they call on the tall guy who's socially awkward first.
Yeah.
And she talks him out of being sure about Aristotle saying
that. Yes. God, that's the worst. The when you really think you know an answer and then they get in your face about it.
Yeah.
Like that was really accurate.
Also great teaching. Like, that's an okay, like, some people I think would consider that abusive teaching. It is not. Mm-mm. It's super helpful. But kicking someone out of class, I've never seen that. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah. I've been kicked out of class for not doing the reading. Yeah.
Really? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Definitely professors at my, not all, I mean, but there were a couple of professors that if you, and we had to stand up a lot. It was stand up, close your book, Socratic method.
Oh, we didn't, no, we didn't have that.
I feel like we had a lot of old Southern bullshit. But like, yeah, because if you did do the reading, you shouldn't have to look at your book, right? So it was like, Ms. So-and-so, stand up, close your book. You know, what did this case tell us? And you can use your notes, but you can't use your book.
Gotcha.
And if it became clear that you did not read the case, there were a couple of professors that would straight up kick you out. There were other professors that if you were late, they locked the doors on the minute.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, one time me and my friend Tim got kicked out of class and it was like the best day ever. We were like, what? I'm sorry. We were asked to leave. Like, this is the best.
I feel like if it happens your first day, it ruins you. If you're into the slog of law school and you get how everything goes, getting kicked out or skipping a class, you're like, yeah, this is fine. I'll just do the reading. It's okay.
Honestly, if I would have gotten kicked out alone, I think I would have walked home and cried and been sad. But since I got kicked out with my friend, I was like, burritos! You know?
Yeah, I remember I used the restroom in a class, and I didn't get called out by name, but then...
The class? Cole, you're not supposed to do that. You have to use a facility for... You can't... That is a crime.
So,
when you defecate in a classroom, I'm sure you get called out.
The law is a specific, very specific discipline, so let me be more specific.
Thank you.
I got up, I left the classroom, and I entered the men's restroom.
Yes, and then what happened in there?
And then I came back to class, and the next day, or the next class, so I guess it was every other day is when you have classes, the professor then instituted a rule that no one was allowed to use the restroom.
What?
During class. Because we're all adults and we can make it an hour and a half. And I was like, well, I couldn't. I had to go to the bathroom. What, like, there are these bizarre arcane rules that you just look at your professors and think, what purpose is this serving? I didn't disrupt class. I didn't stand up and throw confetti up in the air in a fit of glee and leave the classroom. I just silently walked up the side of the classroom and left. And then I ruined everyone's pee privileges for the rest of the semester.
I remember the first kid that got called on in the first day of my, like, the very first class, first day. I remember that kid who had to stand up, close his book, and start answering questions. And my first class was criminal law.
Same here.
Yep. I know his first and last name. I know where I was sitting. I know where he was sitting. Like,
yep. He got bruised up pretty good, I remember. It was, and it wasn't because he didn't read. He just answered about a 10% of the question instead of the whole, he's like, I looked up the crime, and this is what the crime. He's like, well, what other crimes could he have committed? He's like, no, this was the crime. He's like, well, then you don't know what you're doing. I'm like, ooh, that looks like fun.
I don't remember if it was that day or another day, but that same kid and that same professor had a breaking and entering case where it's like the window was open.
Uh-huh.
And so he was Socratic-ing him about the window being open and whether it's a breaking if you go in when the window is open.
Right.
And the kid made up an argument of, like, if the window's open, it's kind of like a, what's the nuisance that, like, draws you in? Like, that kind of thing. It's like,
you know,
if basically you're asking for it if you leave your windows open just for somebody to come in. And the professor was like, is that the same argument as she was wearing such a pretty dress? And he was like, oh, no, definitely not. I'll leave now. I'm packing up my things.
That is how that breaking and entering law works, though, by the way. That is not.
But yeah, man, that poor kid. Anyway, okay.
Rough day.
Let's see. What's next?
So she gets, I did want to actually make fun of Harvard again.
Yes.
If we could, if that's fine with you. That's good?
Yeah, it is. It is fine with me.
Okay. These professors are, you know, obviously actors, but they're Harvard actors, as far as I'm concerned, and they get the case wrong.
Oh, so you looked up
after
the case?
She leaves, they're talking about Gordon versus Steele, which we all read. It's a subject matter jurisdiction case. And I believe the question from Holland Taylor to Selma Blair is, did they find diversity jurisdiction in this case? And Selma Blair goes, no, they did not. I'm here to tell you, yes, they did. Okay, they did. The woman was at school. She lived in Idaho, and the motion to dismiss for lack of subject matter jurisdiction was dismissed because they said she was not a her domicile was not in the state of Pennsylvania. So she was from Idaho.
That's impressive.
So I just want you to know,
it didn't even occur to me to look that up.
So Selma Blair was being very mean and very wrong. Just want to throw that out there.
But so after she gets kicked out of class, Elle goes and gets a pedicure, which is not legal in any nature. But I just want to say, like, Jennifer Coolidge is the best part of this movie. And your favorite line you already said. And I want to tell you that my favorite line is Jennifer Coolidge saying, what does she have that you don't? Three tits. Because Elle finds out that Warren's engaged to Selma Blair before she goes and cries to the nail salon. And what did she have that you don't? Three tits is just the way she says it.
Well, can I also bring up that I think this is hugely important to the law school episode, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think the manicure pedicure thing is indicative of what everybody finds in law school. And I want to know what yours was because I'm sure you had one. You have to have this, like, thing for me, this personal release. Did you have that where you got to law school and you're like, wow, this is stressful. What am I going to do for me? Some people are like, become workout fiends. I didn't.
No,
some people
no,
become,
not me.
You know, get into cooking, get into whatever. You have, like, everybody has their escape thing. What was yours?
Burritos. Felipe's burritos. I would go get a burrito. Big, huge burrito.
I'm 100% sure that you texted me that when Jess and I were in New Orleans, and I was like, where do we go and what do we
just for, like, a standard issue, like, Chipotle level burrito. Felipe's,
because I got back into golf was my thing. So there was this double wide trailer that they called a country club just outside Carbondale.
That sounds right.
And for $50 a month you could join the country club, and I am using air quotes. And it was all the golf you could play. So I got, like, three of my buddies from law school. I'm like, guys, for $50 a month. And it's like 5 minutes from the law school. Super close to where I live. Super close to where I was going to school. So we started setting up our schedule to where we could be, like, done by 11 o'clock in the morning and then just go play 18 holes. And so I got, that was my big release. And, you know, maybe I won a club championship, whatever. It is.
Oh, is that the award that you won?
Maybe, maybe I showed up and, you know, smoked a bunch of dudes, at golf. Okay. Now, were a lot of those guys over 45 years old? Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. And neither do you, but they didn't win. You know, I got my parking spot, whatever. It's all good.
Yeah.
You know, I think I also won $50.
I feel like I would have fit in a little bit better at your law school than I did mine.
I have to admit, my law school, for its faults, was a great place to go to law school. And I think if you have a realistic understanding of what you're doing, which is go through law school, learn the shit, pass the bar. Like, that's what you need to do. Yep. If you can line up jobs, that's great. Not a gigantic portion of our graduating class had jobs lined up waiting for them when they graduated. Most people who did that either were at the top of their class, which is great, or were just going to work at their parents' firm or their whatever. Like, that was the pathway to get a job. And the one thing that I think SIU has tried to work really hard at and still needs to probably work better at is career services is a hugely important thing when you're looking at a law school to go to, in my opinion. Do they have a good career services department? Because SIU at the time I went there was basically like, you don't want to be in Carbondale or St. Louis? No. Okay, well, we don't. We don't know what to do. Not sure what to tell you. So, but yeah, you know, I just like it. You know, club champion, whatever. It's fine.
So we're back in criminal law class. We have L now has done the reading, is ready to go. Victor Garber is up there saying, what kind of client would you prefer?
Yeah.
And L says she would like an innocent client.
Well, and what I love is he peppers her with the Latin, right? You want a malum inse client or you want a malum prohibitum client.
Right. Yeah.
And she wants an innocent one. And then Selma Blair's like, I want malum prohibitum.
Yeah, that was Selma Blair.
Yeah, Selma Blair. Did I say Selma Hayek?
No, you said Selma Blair, but I almost said Celia Ward right now, which is very wrong. Way off.
I will say it's a better movie with Selma Hayek. I'm just going to throw that out. That's a blanket statement just for movies. But
can you imagine if that role was Selma Hayek?
35-year-old Selma Hayek? Just
I would
get it from Warner's perspective. I would totally get it. But just to flex on the law a little bit, malum prohibitum is like jaywalking, okay? That just means that it's only illegal because it has been made illegal. It is not inherently or morally wrong. The malum inse is your murder, your robbery, your rape, your arson, all these things that basically have intent to them. And as a criminal defense attorney, I can tell you that you would probably rather have a client who did the bigger crime.
Yeah, because that gives you some wiggle room.
It gives you a little bit. It gives you, there's arguments to be had with a malum inse client, whereas it's really easy for a DA to prove that you were jaywalking because were you not walking in the crosswalk? They were not guilty.
There are not a lot of good excuses for, like, there's not a lot of good defenses either. Like, he did it, he did it, he did it. You know?
You know, per se violations are a lot less fun to defend and honestly a lot harder.
Right.
So Selma Blair, again, wrong. You want a malum inse client.
She's not a great law student. Then we have L going to the law library to find a study group, and she like brings little muffin bagels and tries to join the study group with Warner, and we'll just keep calling her Selma Blair because I don't remember what her name was. Wait, it was like Vicky or something. Vivian.
Yes, Vivian Kensington.
Yes, and she is told that she can't join that study group because they're full. And I kind of felt this. It was really hard to find a study group.
Super
and I didn't
realistic.
Know that I had to hit the ground running on that. And by the time that I got around to finding a study group, I couldn't. I did join a study group that was just me and my friends Frank and Lane. But it was the wrong study group for me.
Yeah, we did the same thing, like Jess and I, and again, a unique situation where both of us were going to law school at the same time. We did request that the school put us in different sections. So, you know, I don't want to put on somebody the burden of both marrying me and then being with me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I feel like, you know, even the best people in the world aren't going to be able to handle that. That's a lot of me. I get it.
I'm not going to comment.
So there's only so much patience to go around in the world, and I get that. Mm-hmm. But it was nice to have somebody at the house who understood what you were going through. It was nice to mm-hmm. have somebody at the house who got why you have to be at the library at 9 o'clock at night or whatever it is. But we didn't understand the idea of a study group either, so we're kind of like trying to put them together. And we had to have different ones because you have different professors mm-hmm. for different sections. And I got into one with a couple people who are lifelong friends. We're still really good friends with everybody. But you split up the outlines. They get all the law school stuff is just 100% right in this movie, as far as I'm concerned, you know, with the exception of living in dorms. But it's like, yeah, you do the contracts outline. You're responsible for the torts mm-hmm. outline. You're responsible for the criminal law outline. You get property, whatever it is. And I don't know about you, but I think for me, I lasted a semester maybe in a study group and realized this is not for me.
No, it wasn't for me either. I mean, I ended up just kind of studying with my friends, Frank and Lane, like I said, and those guys right. were like hardcore 20 hours a day studiers. And I'm just kind of not like that. And I'd rather talk things through and kind of be a little more interactive. They just like were heads down. It was more of an accountability group, like heads down in the books, do not talk, silent, earplugs, library time, which was not for me. And that's why I do blame my CN torts on them. And then,
I think that's fair.
And then from there on out, I was like a lone wolf, which I think is right. better for me because I feel like you learn the most by making the outline, not assigning them to other people. I don't want to look at somebody else's outline.
There was, you know, you start doing all these things. I think law school panics you, particularly because you're told, like, this is going to be impossible. Mm-hmm. And my first semester, by far my worst grades. I hadn't been in, like I said, I hadn't been in school in a long time. I did not know. I remember taking a practice test. And I was so short of finishing because I fucked up the time. Mm-hmm. Like, you have 3 hours for this practice test. And I'd only got through, like, half of it. The half I did was okay. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I got a really shitty grade on it, even though thankfully the grade didn't count because the timing was just totally messed up. I just didn't have those muscles. The last 2.5 years of law school, my grades were significantly better because, you know, all that stuff came back. But you start like searching the internet for like, who has a good torts outline? Because again, all the cases are the same. Mm-hmm. Outline from Harvard is an outline from SIU is an outline from
Google
Tulane.
An outline. From
yeah. You can Google an outline. You can Google case briefs. You know, mm-hmm. you start to worry about like, am I writing the right case brief? Did I write down enough facts for the case brief or whatever? And then, you know, second semester, I don't think I wrote a case brief after that. I don't think I ever did briefs after that. you know, or they were very short. It right. was like, here's the holding, here's the procedural posture, couple facts, you know, whatever. But this study group thing, like you said, like hit me hard about trying yeah. to find it, trying to find the right one, doing all that stuff. And you know, parlaying that into, these are the friends you're going to have for 3 years.
Yeah.
Like the people you met that, the people I met the first few weeks of law school were pretty much the people I became friends with throughout the 3 years. Save one or two people.
Yeah. I watched the whole election with Frank on Facebook Messenger talking about Steve Kornacki and
well, obviously
how he looked in khakis and we
now Frank
over
Frank
that.
Was at your wedding. I met Frank, didn't I? That sounds familiar.
Maybe, I don't know.
Was he at your wedding?
No. You're thinking of Rich, Cassidy, or Brandon.
Oh, I think I'm thinking of Brandon.
Three law school friends that were there.
Okay, but so I do want to say though, when did you go to a costume party? That wasn't a costume party? Did that ever happen to you?
No, it didn't happen to me. But okay. May I say, at that, this is a non-law thing I need to talk
Fantastic.
About. At that costume party, when she's talking to Warner, when she like goes and talks to him and is like, I just want to dress up or whatever, there is an extra in the back whose hair is so close to a candle that it is terrifying. So if anyone goes back and watches Legally Blonde because this like triggered them to do that, watch that hair. It is scary. Like, they could have really had an accident.
I did do... Anyway, Halloween was very big at SIU, and I just want to say, me and some buddies pulled off the greatest Channel 4 news team you've ever seen. I was Ron Burgundy.
Oh, really?
I spray-painted the suit Burgundy. We went all out for that. It was pretty great.
We didn't really do Halloween at all in New Orleans,
no.
so I'm sure it was
You don't know what it's
in
like
Carbondale,
Illinois, okay?
Yeah, I'm sure
sorry.
Your parties were really,
I'm sorry, they were
really
pretty
crazy.
Great.
All right. Okay, so then we get like a studying montage. We get her being like,
we get the Rocky workout
class,
montage
like
of studying.
Yeah, she's like brilliant because she's like, would you need evidence? And then everybody's like, whoa, Elle's got it now. Like, she does know about evidence.
Yeah, that wasn't a great sequence of, like, the teacher going, no. What kind of evidence would you... Okay, that's not how that goes.
Mens rea? But then we have Elle going to get that dog back for her friend.
Yes.
Do you have anything to say about this?
You mean a law student totally pretending to be a lawyer and using words thoroughly incorrectly that don't mean anything? Yes, that happens.
Yeah. I mean, it's played for comedy that she's like, according to habeas corpus, you do have a common law marriage and like all this stuff. But like, also, that's illegal. You can't
do
that.
You cannot do that. That is
as impersonating a doctor or something.
But law students do that. That 100% happens. They go and give legal advice. I also want to let everyone know, because here at Movie Briefs, we want to do the legal research for you.
Yeah.
There is no common law marriage recognized in the state of Massachusetts. So she hadn't, she would not have had a family law class at that point because she's a first semester, first year student. But her arguments across the board were invalid.
And, you know, if you think you have a common law marriage, odds are you don't. It's
real,
real
hard to do.
It's real hard to have a common law marriage. And I don't know if anywhere separates property after a common law
marriage. Yeah,
usually you get,
I didn't look that up.
You get the benefits, but you don't, I don't think you get divorce law out of common law marriages. You might in some it's state to state, so I don't know in different states.
It's definitely not in Massachusetts, that I can tell you.
I had a buddy pretend to be a lawyer when he was getting arrested for peeing on a building in the quarter. It was just like, you know, peeing on the side of a bar and like wanted to tell the cops he was a lawyer, and we were like,
don't do that. Like,
stop it. Like, this isn't going to help you. You think the cops are going to be nicer to you if you're the drunk guy peeing on a building who's like, you don't know who you're talking to. I'm a lawyer. Yeah. Like, oh, God, no. Please.
Well, and I feel like there's two types of lawyers. One who wants to tell everybody they're a lawyer, and the camp that I fall into, which is like, if you find out I'm a lawyer, that's okay.
Yeah, because I've never gotten a good reaction from it. Like,
no.
What do you do? I'm a lawyer. Okay.
Really good.
All right. Well, you know.
There's always something. Maybe.
What are your hobbies? You know? Yeah. Okay. All right. Now we're into sperm donor time.
Yes. We got to talk.
Do you have anything to say?
Of course I do.
Yeah.
We got to talk a little bit about crazy law school hypothetical game.
Yeah.
So this is what I feel like after the professors get a feel for their class and students get a feel for the flow of law school, which the schedule is not as overbearing as how much you need to study.
Right.
That was one thing that hit me coming from like the professional world where you would have meetings all day to like, I'm sorry, I have 3 50-minute classes today and that is it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's doable.
Yeah.
But once they get this feel, you start doing these crazy-ass hypotheticals in an attempt to get people to think about defenses and what is or may not be certain either crimes or torts or whatever it is. It is meant as an exercise in analysis. What ends up happening is there are a number of lawyers who never grow out of this. Ever. And a great example of it is the sperm donation, which those are good arguments. I had no problem with that discussion. And, you know, Elle's argument of did she try to go see any of the other babies, I thought was a perfectly good...
That argument's fine.
The rest of them are bad.
But the rest of them, I feel like, could be applied to any paternity situation at all. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you're a sperm donor, like...
Right.
Every father who wants rights to his kid also masturbated. Like, it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that he was a sperm donor.
Right.
So
that's
not a great, whatever.
Well, and when the professor goes and you just won your case, the problem that happens is, A, no, she didn't.
No. It was creative,
that would not,
but it was bad.
It was creative. It was well thought out. It was well said. You would not win the argument.
No.
But that law student... 70% of the time then becomes that kind of lawyer who then plays this crazy law school hypothetical game for the rest of their career.
Yeah, and it's super annoying. I think this is the class where she blatantly had a dog sitting in her purse next to her.
Yeah, that
like,
sounds about right.
I never got to.
Because she also was handing out violet scented. Oh, I don't think they say what the scent is, but the scented resumes.
I like that
which
you
I
like
never...
to think that's violets, though. That's very sweet.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I never carried around resumes. Did you carry around resumes?
No. I don't even think I had a resume. I was,
we did get
I
cards.
I was so not together. Like, and like, you can't imagine the hot mess I was in law school. Like, I was good as far as, like, study. I knew how to read and I knew how to study and stuff. But just, like, socially, like, I lived 2 miles from campus and did not get a parking spot. Parking's hell on that particular campus. And so I had to walk 2 miles every day to and from class in Louisiana. I was the sweatiest kid. So sweaty all the time. Everyone else looked great. I was just drenched constantly. Stinky. I was awful, awful.
Did your students run the gamut of there would be students who would dress like they were partners at a high-powered Manhattan law firm?
Yeah.
And then there would be students that would go all the way down to, like, basically a tank top and gym shorts.
Yes. Well, I had to. Like, I would put a sweatshirt in my backpack because it was 110 degrees in the swamp.
Anyway. Yeah, I was definitely more the gym shorts guy, but we had a couple of students who would heels, skirts, suits with no jacket, like, yeah, every day.
And all
you're
the
like,
time. Yep.
Where are you going?
Who are you trying to impress? Yeah, So I didn't have a resume that I carried around in my backpack to hand out to people. I was good if, like, my hair wasn't wet at any given time.
Well, I did want to tell you, I think I brought it up earlier, we had cards. SIU made us all cards.
That's
business
nuts.
Cards.
It's nuts.
And it was a very large waste of money for them. But you get, like, 150 cards. It was like, Cole Williams, candidate for Juris Doctor, class of whatever. And,
you know, Tulane might have, and I was too much of a shit show to go pick him up. Like, it's quite possible. It's possible.
Somebody at Tulane's going to be like, we got to call Erin because she doesn't seem to get what we do here.
Whatever. Like, we graduated however many. I was one of the 9 with jobs, so go fuck yourself. I got a job.
So I think this is pretty much where it moves into the murder case, right?
Yeah, this is about when she we got a question about, so Callahan, who's the Victor Garber criminal law professor, also is a full-time practicing defense attorney and then has an internship at his firm that students are competing for. We got a question from Tabby, I think, that was like, is this how it works? Like, are law professors also practicing lawyers? Do they have these, like, internships? It seems like it's 2 full-time jobs. And you're right. Some lawyers teach classes at your law school, but they're, like, adjunct professors that do, like,
right,
a class, and it'll be, like, a seminar, like, a once-a-week sort of class or something like that. And there are internships you can get. Like, this is kind of a thing, but he would not be your criminal law professor.
Right.
He would be, like, your trial advocacy seminar advanced criminal practice professor or something.
Yeah, maybe
like
a trial ad professor, because I remember my trial ad professor was an AUSA. You know, right. So you would have people who, like you said, do practice and teach maybe those adjunct classes. If you do have what would be considered, like, a tenure track professor still practicing law, which they can do. I mean, there's no rule that says the law professor has to be a lawyer that I'm aware of, but it would be insane for a law school to try to get students to come to their law school where they weren't being taught by lawyers.
Yeah.
But, you know, Innocence Project stuff they'll work on.
Yeah. I mean, I had a full-time tenured professor that liked to throw amicus briefs around just because he was so respected in his niche field, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. But mostly when you've got your tenure track professors, it's more about publication for them and a little less about more practicing of the law. But you do have, like you said, they kind of mixed an adjunct professor in with a tenure track professor for this Callahan guy.
Yeah.
But
so now it leaves law school completely, and now we are all criminal case.
Yes. This is where it goes from being almost 100% correct to being almost 100% incorrect.
Yes. This is where it goes to being crazy nuts. Like,
yeah.
He's just got a pack of 1L interns running this case.
Nobody else goes to this law school.
His hot associate. And then he's got just a pack of 1Ls, which is nuts. On a murder case.
They say, I need some interns. I just brought in a murder case.
Yeah.
One. And this murder case is a biggie. And because of my caseload, we need interns. Now, you would bring in those interns to work on the caseload.
Sure.
Not the one murder case.
Like, well, and also, you wouldn't bring in 5 interns who just learned what murder is. And I know you're out there thinking, I know what murder is. No, you don't. Like, they had to learn what murder is. And they may or may not even be there in their first semester of law school.
Right.
They don't know anything.
You don't know anything. You know, all you know is enough to get in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Make a lot of mistakes. That's how much you know.
It's like,
Oh yeah. It's very bad.
Bring in some 3Ls if you really need interns on your one murder case. It's kind of
nuts.
Your
one murder case.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, it was bad staffing. We can agree.
Yeah. He brought them all to the jail. They all sat around a little conference table at the jail to talk to the client.
Really big meeting room. The meeting rooms are typically not enough for about 35 people.
You know, I was once in a colossal meeting room like that at a jail that was like really scary, like a huge conference table. I couldn't figure out what they did in there normally. Is this like where they have the like warden's meeting, like the weekly meeting or something?
Right.
Like I couldn't figure out what function this would serve in a jail, but I once was in a room like that.
I was in one big one at a prison, which made more sense because those are a little bit more, you
sorry
know,
this was a prison. I never had to deal with the jail prison thing very much, but yeah this was at a prison.
Yeah, the ones at jails are usually a little bit more like her telephone conversation. My experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
Or very small meeting rooms.
At the jail I would go to regularly, we had like a teeny tiny little room with like a card table sort of thing. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. She says, I'm not going to give you my alibi. I see your face. The defendant says, I'm not going to give you my alibi. And if you put me on the stand, I'll lie.
Let's unpack this just a little bit.
Yeah.
One, you can't put on a witness you know is going to lie.
Nope.
That's a big no-no.
Well, you can, but you can't ask him any questions.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if this has ever happened to you. So if your client wants to testify, it is their constitutional right to do so.
Yes.
So you can't stop them. You can't say, no, I'm your attorney, and you can't lie on the stand, so I'm not going to let you testify. That's one of those decisions that they get to make. You can make a lot of decisions about what motions to file and who to call as witnesses. And there's a lot of decisions the lawyer can make without even really talking to the client if they want to. You should, if you want to.
And even if the client agrees that they don't want to testify, it is extremely good practice out there. You will put that waiver on the record.
Yeah, yes.
So that even if they agree with you, you go on and say, I've explained the rights to my client. They have decided to waive their constitutional right. They will agree to it. That way they can't come back later and say, I wanted to testify and I wasn't.
Either way, really, because they're waiving a right if they want to testify. Because they're waiving the right to remain silent. And if they are silent, then they waive the right to testify. Anyway, it's their decision. So if they want to testify and they've told you, like, straight up, Cole, I'm going to lie. I'm going to go up there and say I didn't do it. And guess what? I did. Then what you have to do is either withdraw from the case or you have to get up there and say, my client would like to give a sworn statement and I am going to have nothing to do with it. And then you back away slowly and hope the jury doesn't notice that you're trying
that
to.
You are now under the table.
Yeah.
Sucking your thumb.
If you're in a judge alone case, they know exactly what's happening, which kind of sucks. But you might, I don't know. I don't think you get away with it in a jury case either. But that's what has to happen because you can't participate in them lying on the stand. If you know that a witness, if it's a witness, just don't call them. But if it's your client, you can't help it sometimes.
Yeah, they also, I think she also says, if it's between losing this case and going to prison or losing my reputation, I would rather go to prison.
Yeah.
And I'm just here to tell you that you wouldn't.
No.
She's not going to let's play tennis all day prison for murder. She's going to prison for murder. So
I did have, as a prosecutor, a situation where a victim had a secret that they didn't want to come out, and it was the thing that would nullify the defense in the case. Like,
right.
And she did not want this to come out, and it became a really difficult situation because I represented the U.S. Army and the federal government. I wasn't her lawyer, so in a way, like, the Army's interest is this guy gets convicted. I don't really care about her secrets. Which is a different situation than they're in, because they represent this
of course, yeah.
Yeah. Fortunately, this victim had her own attorney, because victims get attorneys in the Army, and I just let them deal with it.
Yeah, it was, I mean, again, all very well and good, but this is just not how that goes. And also, there are ways to show that alibi and get that alibi out there without it coming out that it was because of liposuction and things like this. Like, there are many avenues besides illegally allowing a first-year law student to practice law.
And, you know, your lawyer has to know about it to be able to keep it secret for you. If they don't know, they don't know how to mitigate. They don't, you know.
Like, where are you on this? Like, she should have been telling the trial team this alibi.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
I mean, it's irresponsible and bad lawyering to not do it now. Not trusting Victor Garber and stuff like that. If you want to withdraw from the team or whatever you want to do, that's a different, that's a totally different ethical question.
I mean, it's a different, what, where I get kind of tripped up on the alibi thing is I feel like the trial team needs to know whether we end up using it in court against the client's wishes is a different thing. And if I'm Elle Woods in this situation and I know what a snake Victor Garber is, which she arguably does or does not, I don't know. He seemed like he was going to use it whether she liked it or not, meaning the client liked it or not. In that situation, I might not, because I don't trust my trial team to have an intelligent conversation with my client about this. I don't know, but if it's a good trial team,
by you either tell them or you withdraw, because it can't be one or the other. It's got to, because in the right hands, like I think Luke Wilson would do what you or I would probably do with it is like, okay, she had liposuction. That means that there are medical records. Mm-hmm. We can get these medical records. We can show the district attorney and say, this is incredibly important that this information not get out, but we want to discuss with you that we have a rock solid alibi. There's a potential.
There's a lot of things that can be done. Yeah.
Could dismiss the case. Mm-hmm. And they can't go out and show those medical records in public or anything like that. So there's a lot that can be done with that information that isn't her getting on the stand and saying, I had liposuction.
Right. If the trial team is all those interns and Luke Wilson, I tell them every day of the week.
Yep.
But he was acting in a way that seemed like she was just going to like tell the press or something. Which
Not. Is it time to get to the most batshit insane part of this trial?
Well, I just want to say the part where Victor Garber turns to Vivian and asks her for more plum sauce for his takeout is a very accurate portrayal of a female intern. Okay.
That I very much imagine.
Yeah. In my internship at the district attorney's office in Orleans Parish, I had to learn how to make coffee quickly and often, and it was my only duty for a fair number of weeks.
Fair amount of time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I never interned, as a female intern, but also I never interned for any lawyers. I was just interning for judges my 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, you know, I don't have that experience. I couldn't have made them coffee if I wanted to, unless they wanted me to run all over, you know, the courthouse or whatever. Uh-huh. So.
I'll tell you, when I interned for a judge in a criminal court, one of the court reporter's duties at the end of the day was to wash out his coffee cup for him and put it on a little folded paper towel upside down so that it would be ready for him in the morning. I made the coffee, of course, as the intern, but the court reporter had to wash out his cup.
I hate that judge. I just want you to know. I hate him.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, have you ever brought a client a gift basket to prison?
I have not. No. I have not either. No. I'm very strict about the no gifts policy.
Yeah. You know who else is really strict about the no gifts policy? The prison.
The prison. Here's what the prison gets. They're called prison packets or jail packets.
Uh-huh.
So I will send paper, a pencil. The paper usually has to be a specific kind of color.
Yep. Yeah.
All the jails have rules about this, and it'll be like stamps, envelopes, and paper in the jail packet.
Mm-hmm.
Not Cosmo, not
no
food. None of that stuff. That doesn't happen.
I've been shown out of a jail before, or this was a prison before, for wearing an underwire bra. I don't know what they thought was going to happen under video surveillance, that I was going to somehow get this wire out of my bra and then give it to my client, and then he was going to, I don't even know with a bra wire what he could do. They're pretty short. He's not going to strangle anyone with it. I don't think he can cut himself or others with it. I don't even know the reason. And then I also was not allowed in without a bra because that was provocative. So there was nothing I could do to see my client.
Put in a real bad spot there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know. In our jails, they are so adamant about what you can have. If I need to pass papers to have my client sign something, we have to get into a special area and I pass it through the wall to the sheriff's deputy. They pass it then to the client. The client is allowed to sign it, and these things need to be signed in ink, but it's just the plastic insert to a Bic pen, and they sign it with that, and that's the whole deal. Like, there's no me handing a pen over to my client and having them sign something.
Pens
like
are, is, yeah. Bic pens are one of those things. Anyway.
So gift baskets, hard no.
I'm sorry, this is another story. It's quick, I swear. What type of, was that a Hobby Lobby? No, it was a Michael's. And this guy who is, like, very clearly, like, super strung out, just, like, ran in the front door, grabbed a big thing of Bic pens, and just ran out. And this lady's like, you know, the checkout lady at the... No, it was Joanne's Fabric. It was the checkout lady at Joanne's Fabric.
Didn't want to throw Michaels under the bus.
Yeah, sweet, you know, 80-year-old woman asking me what my craft project is, you know. It's like, that man, he's clearly homeless, and he just loves pens. We just let him take them, because he just loves pens. And I was like, oh, you know what? I'm just not going to... I'm not going to tell her. Like, she just she has a view of the world that I can never get back. So I'm just going to let her have it.
Yeah, don't let her know what the side action is on the
what happens pens. To the pins. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, all right, now we're at trial.
It's a bad trial. It's just bad. All of it. All of it's bad. Don't law like this if you're going to go law.
No, Callahan really cuts it close on prep. Like, I think he goes and interviews he sends a 1L to interview the ex-wife, like, the day before trial.
Well, there's a lot of shit going on short notice, because he's like, we just picked up a murder case, and apparently we are going to trial, and we'll be calling witnesses in 2 weeks.
Ugh, that's always the case with movies, though.
I know.
I mean, and it was a little more accurate in A Few Good Men, because that's kind of how it goes, but...
Right.
In the civilian world, what happens. 3 years.
This would be... Yeah, I've got a murder right now that is, it's going to be 3.5 years before it goes to trial.
The longest I ever had a case draw on was about 1.5 years in the military, and that was only because there were, like, serious discovery issues.
Yeah. It's aging shit in state court is a little bit easier, depending on the jurisdiction, but this is not how that would go.
No.
But anyway, they get into court, and they're calling witnesses, and the state calls, it's... The state calls the pool boy,
right? Cabana boy, and the daughter.
And the daughter.
I noticed this because, like, I don't know why she's on the stand again at the end of the trial. The state
right?
called
that
her
was my question.
As their first witness.
You can always have her, you know, when you dismiss witnesses, typically my standard practice is to say, yeah, this witness can be dismissed subject to recall.
Sure.
So that means that they are still under, you know, the court's order to be recalled if they need to be.
You could recall them, but you need, like, a reason. You need a reason right. why you didn't ask these questions the first time they were on the stand. You
exactly.
don't want to have the same person take the stand in the prosecution case and the defense case. That's why you're allowed to ask the questions. That's what cross-examination right. is. So if you want to bring somebody back, you yeah, have to say, like, exactly. Judge, we just found some new information, or this is to rebut something that came up that we didn't anticipate, something like that.
Yeah. And I guess... Let's talk very quickly about, can Elle Woods, I think that's probably the biggest question, is can Elle Woods actually represent this client?
No. Right? Yeah. She can't.
No, she cannot do she that. Cannot. That is the correct answer, Aaron. Yeah. Now, because we would be remiss if we didn't fact check everything a Harvard law student says.
Sure.
See
yes.
Ted Cruz. So they cite Supreme Judicial Court Rule 3.03 from Massachusetts. That is the rule that allows student attorneys. Most states will have laws like this that allow students in law school who have completed a certain amount of class. That does vary from time to time, but I can tell you that it certainly does not include first semester or even second semester 1L students. It just yeah. doesn't. So Elle Woods would not be able to do this case for a myriad of reasons. Number one, she hasn't been in law school long enough. In Massachusetts, you have to be what they call a senior law student. So that is late in your law student career.
Mm-hmm.
You had to have completed or at least enrolled in evidence or a trial ad type of class, which does not happen in your first year.
No.
You also would need written approval by the dean mm-hmm. as to your character, yeah, your legal
say,
ability.
There's some paperwork that has to happen with the person who's supervising you and your law school in order to
yes.
do it.
In Illinois, it's Supreme Court Rule 711, and it's sort of the same deal, but you have to apply for it, get the form, and they send you a card. It looks like a driver's license,
mm-hmm.
which
I
is your 711 license. I do, too. I wanted to find it. I couldn't find it, but I know I've got
it. You know what? It might be in this drawer. I'm going to go rummaging a little bit.
Oh, fantastic. In California, for those of you who care, it's California Rule of Court 9.42.
Louisiana,
basically the same
I think it's
thing
Rule
as 20. Illinois. So students can represent clients, but the biggest issue that I see in this not only is her age in law school, but in Massachusetts, the client either needs to, or the client has to be the Commonwealth of Massachusetts or needs to be indigent. They can't go work for private firms. So
right.
there's just really no way Elle Woods is doing this, because even though Allie Larder's in prison, maybe she's needs, you know, this is a pro bono case, but she's definitely not indigent because she says he better be good for all of the money I'm paying him,
right.
Which means there's no chance Elle Woods is working for an indigent client.
Well, and there's also just no way Callahan's a public defender. Like, look at his office.
No,
and
he's,
look at his clothes.
Yeah, he's not on the,
look at everything.
He's not on the appointment list either. Like,
no,
they're not throwing conflict cases to Callahan.
Uh-huh, no. If Callahan's getting conflict cases, he's handing them off to Emmett for sure. Like, he's not doing any conflict cases.
Right.
So that's the biggest thing. She shouldn't be at the table. She shouldn't. There's no possible way this happens.
No. She could pass notes up to the table. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So if the perm thing came out, she could be like, you need a recess. I need to talk to you. She mm-hmm. definitely killed the guy or whatever. You can do it that way.
Sure.
But, then you also can't question Linda Cardellini the way that she was questioned.
Was she questioned? Okay, first I want to say that the court adjourns. Did you notice that the court adjourns in the middle of the Cabana Boys testimony out of fucking nowhere? Like, what was that?
Yeah, courts generally are not like, let's cut it off. Now, sometimes you've got testimony that will go on for days and you just have to cut off in the middle of
it. But the person didn't even say, the prosecutor didn't even say no further questions or that's all for me. Nothing. It was just like, question, court's adjourned. It's like, what?
Yes, I had sex with her. The court is adjourned until tomorrow.
What?
Let the jury sit with that. We're not going to cross on any of that. Just let the court...
Like, I could see getting to the end of the state's questioning and then being like, we'll do cross tomorrow, you're still under oath, you're sequestered, don't talk to anybody. I get that, but, like, she didn't even finish her questions. I would have been like,
she didn't say, I have no
may I be
questions.
Heard? Like, may I be heard? I'm in the middle of my fucking direct. Are you kidding me?
It's 1:45 in the afternoon.
Yeah, it was super weird. Oh, another thing about the Cabana Boy, I just want to say, like, how they, like, figure out he's gay and stuff. So, like, he comes up and he says, you're not going to stomp at me with your last year's Prada shoes. And then she's like, oh, he knows about shoes, so he must be gay.
Yes.
Let's just push that. Problematic enough. Let's push this.
It's all the whole gay storyline, very problematic.
Very, a very big problem. But then Emmett gets up and does, like, your boyfriend's name is Chuck. And then it's like, that's the smoking gun. Like, we've done it. As if no one could ever cheat on their boyfriend with a woman. Like, there's no such things as pansexuals or bisexuals in the world of Legally Blonde. Like, we got him. He's gay. It's like, just because you slept with a man doesn't mean you can't sleep with a woman.
Like the DA's next question on redirect isn't going to be like, okay, let's do this.
Yeah.
But also, you know, don't bring your boyfriend to court who's going to get upset. I mean...
Don't bring your boyfriend to court at all. If you're a witness...
Ever.
Don't ever.
Ever.
Never. No one.
Mm-mm.
Don't bring anybody to court.
Also, is it a little weird to you that the boyfriend was probably there for all of the testimony? So was probably in on the fact that he was playing straight to probably get paid and convict this woman? But the concept that he tried to walk back the relationship was just what sent him off
really
the fucking rails.
Like, yeah. Also, okay, so this is how this Cabana Boys testimony goes. It's like half of direct, adjourn for the day, wake up the next morning, do one cross-examine question. Callahan has one cross-examination question. One.
Yeah.
And then sits down.
It's not a great question either.
No. It's Callahan's the worst lawyer I think I've seen on television after
it's
all
not
this.
Good. And Matthew McConaughey's been a lawyer a few times.
He's a fantastic television lawyer. How dare you? Maybe that's what we should do next. Maybe that's what we should do next. Anyway, we'll talk about it.
We'll talk later.
So then Emmett stands up after questioning is done. No further questions, Your Honor. Wait,
you
I have some questions.
Have
it's not your fucking witness, Emmett. You can't.
It's not your witness. If it
the
was
best
gonna be,
you can do.
If it was going to be that, you had to take him from the get. That's how that works.
Yeah. The best you can do is lean over to your buddy and be like, would you mind asking some of these other questions? And then he could stand up and be like, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I do have a couple more questions. Please allow me to reopen questioning. I'm an idiot. I didn't check with my co-counsel before I sat down. Please let me.
Yeah. And if you have co-counsel in a case, I've never not either walked over or had them walk over to me and be like, hey, is that everything?
Yeah. One thing that TV and movies gets really wrong in like high stakes cases is the amount of silence that happens. Just walking around, passing things to people, like quiet coughing, you know, like that kind of thing. Okay, so then we've got the sexual harassment scene that night.
Yes.
I just have to say, watching Victor Garber, it is a masterclass in acting. Watching him hit on a lady and make us believe it.
It's something.
I'm sorry. I love Victor Garber. My heart is beats amazing. For him. He's so good. I love him.
He is one of those guys. And again, sorry, this is part of a different podcast.
Sorry. But
every movie I see, I'm like, I could use some Victor Garber in this movie. I don't care what it is.
But I love him in real life, too. He's such a good interview. He's such a funny guy. I just love him. And this scene where I'm like, wow, I really believe that Victor Garber is interested in this lady.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Was like, boobs, yes, that's that's for me.
And he is so, like, he is the nicest person on earth in real life.
Or at least
seems to be.
No, too many people like him. There's no way he's not that nice.
Yeah.
And he just plays assholes all the time.
Perfectly.
Shady.
And he's great at
shady,
it.
Shady, shady, straight assholes. I don't know how he does it. Okay, anyway, sorry. But she quits because he has put his hand on her knee and said she needs to, like, go all the way if she wants to be a real lawyer or whatever. And
right.
That's why he hired her to be on the internship, she assumes, which I agree with because she didn't show any kind of prowess in the law school class that he taught.
Yeah, she's not, for all the things Elle is good at, what they show in law school classes is not a show of, like, excellence.
Right. Which she could do. She could withdraw for that reason. And then Holland Taylor cheers her up.
Yep. With the thing that sucks the most is like, yeah, we know that about him.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's you're going to let one, like, she assumes from the conversation exactly what happened. It's like,
yeah.
You don't want to go to the dean on that one? Or
yeah. You've got a little power here, Holland.
Talk to
any kind
of disciplinary boards.
Although, even when they were flashed way back, when they were talking about letting her into the school,
mm-hmm.
the guys were like, well, I mean, she is, 4.0, and, mm-hmm. I mean,
we could get away with letting this hot chick into Harvard. We could get away with it.
She'll be here for 3 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gross, but probably not inaccurate.
Yeah, I was going to say, the table of 10 white men talking about how hot the Delta Nu was didn't strike me as too inaccurate, except for that she had a video essay.
Yeah.
You do need to send a picture in when you apply for law school, though.
Which was directed by a Coppola, but still had the record square in it.
right.
So, you guys make your own decisions as to what Coppola that was. Aaron,
it was
any
Sophia.
Thoughts?
It was Sophia Coppola. No, it was too entertaining and good, honestly.
Well, the record
the editing
was
made
symbolic
sense. The lines were said in a way that I heard them and were linear to the plot of the thing. I'm sorry. Things were centered, you know, like I...
it was like, framed.
It was
the whole
framed.
Thing was right there in front of me.
Yeah, I understood it.
It was lit.
It was lit. How do you feel about these guys? So then Emmett and Elle and what's-her-face go and talk to the client and basically shit-talk Callahan to the client. Is that an ethical problem, I guess, is what I'm asking? Because, like, you shouldn't shit-talk your fellow lawyers.
It's an ethical problem. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's an ethical violation. And just so you guys know, we're going to talk a lot about ethics, I think, on a lot of these podcasts, because that's where the drama gets in these movies a lot of the times.
Mm-hmm.
And the more, I don't want to say ethical you are in real life, but the rules of ethics are drawn right on the edge of what are you allowed to do. Not what should you do, not what is good practice, but what is literally, legally permissible. Like, you should never... ever do some of the things that you actually are legally allowed to do by the rules of ethics. And that's why they become very difficult calls, because, you know, you take this exam, you take the bar exam, which I think everyone's familiar with, but you also take something that's called the MPRE, which is an ethics exam that you have to pass. And if you're really unethical, you have to take it twice. Aaron, how many times have you taken it?
I took it twice, but not because I failed it. It was because it expired by the time I needed to be admitted into another bar. You got to take it every 8 years, okay?
I wasn't saying that you failed it. I was saying that maybe the state was like, we're a little concerned. We just need a...
I passed it.
A refresher.
So much, okay? I passed it hard.
But I was worried about the MPRE, and everybody kind of walks into it like, oh, this joke test. I was so worried about the MPRE.
You're not worried until you're sitting for it, and you're like, holy shit, I have no idea.
Because if you pick what you shouldn't do, you'll get a lot of questions wrong.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's a weird, it's sort
of
a weird
thing. The more ethical you are, the harder the MPRE is.
Exactly.
You're like, well, I'd never do something like that.
Yeah, I would absolutely, like, I would never sleep with a client. Well, you can.
Yeah, you can.
As long as the,
you can
as long
sleep
as you either started before
depends
the representation
on when you
want
to start sexing after. Up that client. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, how about just never? That's easier.
Yeah,
let's just make that the rule.
Don't represent people you're sleeping with.
You can't let that get in the way of love.
Okay. Fair.
That's what the judicial canon of ethics tells us.
Well, I was just thinking of it in the realm of like, okay, she's hired these lawyers. She's hired this pack of lawyers, or maybe this firm, right, to represent her. And now they're sitting there shit-talking Callahan, who's the partner or the firm.
Right.
The result of that is that they get hired in their personal capacity, not through the firm, to represent her. And I don't know if they're compensated or not. I don't know. That's the thing. But
I don't think that's what happens.
If you shit talk one of your teammates so that you would get hired just you, like, I feel like that is an ethical violation.
It might be, but it's not. It's more about removing the lawyer than the law firm.
So you're saying that since Emmett is still an associate at the law firm and he stays on the case, that it's fine?
I think so. I think because they're basically just saying, like, this lawyer is fucking this up. She doesn't fire the law firm and then hire Elle Woods.
I don't know.
She stays with the law firm. So it's and guys, this is the...
This is a really exciting part of this podcast. Sorry.
Yeah.
I just
this is the hard part
of
weaving through these ethical questions, though.
Yeah.
That's the hard part of doing it, is it would be something if it was a joint, it was the Aaron Law Firm and the Cole Law Firm, and it was us doing this case together, and I got them to fire you and hire me in entirety.
Right.
Absolutely, I think that's
an
ethical
violation. But see, I see Elle Woods as separate from the law firm, because she's not their associate.
But the client would still be paying Callahan, and she can't hire Elwood. She has to have a licensed attorney.
Yeah, she's not
supervising her.
I don't know if anyone gets paid after Callahan leaves.
Well, the firm does. Callahan's firm gets paid.
Because he's just...
I'll say this, they've been paid.
They've been paid. But I don't know if they're getting paid for this time, because Emmett
is
stepping out.
They have to,
because
Emmett works there.
Callahan says, I'm not allowing you, or I'm not going to, my firm is not going to supervise this law student. And then Emmett says, I will. You know what I mean?
I thought he was saying, I won't.
Yeah,
but if he's saying the firm won't, I think that's a different question.
It might be, it might not. Anyway, I wasn't sure. Okay.
Yeah, if you want to get into it, it's a very interesting legal question. As we just laid out for you.
How do you feel about Callahan looking at his client in view of the jury and everybody in the gallery and saying, enjoy prison on his way out? How'd you feel about that ethically?
That's a mistrial.
That's a mistrial for
sure. One
of
the many reasons this is all a mistrial.
That's a mistrial.
And honestly,
the sorority girls coming in and yelling, vote for Elle is a
vote
mistrial.
Vote for Elle is a mistrial.
Yeah.
Actually, all of this shit happening in front of the judge, or in front of the jury,
mistrial.
Like firing the lawyer, all of that's a mistrial. Callahan was actually helping her out, like, oh, just start this over in front of 12 new people.
Yeah.
That'd be
great.
That would be better.
Elle standing up and just kind of like generally rambling about mens rea is
That's called
rough.
A pretrial motion. Yeah. Not a good one, but you wouldn't be doing that. Like, I wanted the judge to say, this is not argument.
Yeah.
This is not, you have questions or you don't.
Yeah.
Not, why are you giving me a lesson?
She
Which
has
makes
a
it
dog
seem like it's okay to say that.
In court. When she's doing her question, she turns to the jury to tell a story about Tracy, who was in her sorority and got a perm, but then got hosed down later that day with the hose. for a wet t-shirt contest. You don't get to turn to the jury and tell stories in the middle of questioning.
Nope, it's not story time. That's what closing argument's for.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You get to tell a lot of shit at closing argument.
And then Linda Cardle Macaroni's. She...
Hey.
Yeah.
I love that nickname, and we're sticking with that.
Cardle Macaroni's?
Cardle Macaroni. I'm all over. You know what?
I didn't even realize that was her until the opening credits. Like, it came on, and it was, like, Linda Cardellini or whatever. And I was
She's
like,
in so much stuff that I feel like people are just now going, oh, my God, she was in all those. Because yeah, it's always just been Freaks and Geeks and what happened to her.
I was like, was she one of her sorority friends? Or was she, like, one of the... And I'm like, I remember there was, like an aggressively feminist law student. Was she that girl? Like, yeah. I couldn't figure it out until it got to the end. Anyway, doesn't matter. Then she questions her about the perm. She breaks. I thought it was you coming through the door. I shot him. And then what happens is off the chain crazy. The judge says...
I was just going to say, you're talking about the judge, yes?
I wrote it down.
I'll let you have it because
I believe the... Yes. Okay. She says, I thought it was you coming through the door. I thought it was you. She's crying. The judge says, take the witness into custody where she will be charged.
Yep.
That's not something that judges do.
That's not what a judge can do.
Judges do not charge people with crimes.
That's not judging.
Case dismissed.
Also can't do that.
Yeah, judges do that, but not like this.
Usually, I will say this, on a motion
by
the people, they will dismiss a case, or in the interest of justice, they can here in California. Sure. I shouldn't have said that they can't, but that's not how that goes.
That's not how it happens. Then she turns to the lady on trial and says, you're free to go.
Also not how that
works. Also not something that she can do.
I don't want to break your heart, those of you who may be defendants who are in custody.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're a defendant who's out of custody... and you win a trial, mm-hmm. and you're found not guilty, you do get to walk out and go home.
Mm-hmm.
If you are in custody, you are not guilty, you walk right back into jail, because mm-hmm. they have to process you
out. Yeah, I was going to say, she's got to get her stuff. Like
you don't get to just walk out the door of the courthouse.
Nope. In the military, you do. But that's because they pack you up before your trial. Because when it's trial day, it's trial day. They know when they pack you all up. And
yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, you definitely walk back in and get processed out, and you might be out in a couple hours or something.
Obviously.
But yeah, that judge was not a good judge, not doing any judging of any kind.
No.
Really.
Actually, doing too much judging, really. Too much judging. Judging that's not,
too much recessing.
Not really judging. She's prosecuting is what she's doing.
She's prosecuting, yeah. You're going to be charged with this murder. I mean, the DA could literally look at it and be like, yeah, I'm good. We don't need to do this.
Honestly, a lot of times when that happens, like if somebody gets a not guilty, Oh, man, this is going to be another... This is just as long as the first one. Sorry. So if somebody... I was listening to this podcast that was like... There was one of these true crime armchair quarterback podcasts. And like somebody was found not guilty of a murder. And then like the podcast host and the whole podcast audience was incensed that the cops didn't then go reopen the investigation and find the real murderer. It's like, no... As far as the cops are concerned, that's still the murderer. They don't go now find the real murderer. They're just like, aw, shucks, they got found not guilty. Sucks that murderer is free. Like, they don't go back and, like, maybe in this case where she, like, totally confessed to the murder, they would go try her.
Different thing.
But, like, most of the time, when you get the NG, that's it. That murder investigation is done.
Yeah, unless there is substantial new evidence that is brought to law enforcement. Different thing. But just saying, there was this other thing you could have done, maybe. And it's like, well, that's resources are finite, folks.
Yeah.
Like,
After not guilty in the case, that doesn't get tossed back to the investigators to go find the real murderer. No.
No. They're like, no, that you just, DA, you didn't do your job.
Yeah, they just get mad at the lawyers.
Yeah, you were supposed to get that person convicted. Yeah. I did what I was supposed to do.
Then we just have the speech that that Elle gave, and so did former First Lady Melania Trump, and it's a great speech.
Both the speech and the movie got a sequel, so that's good.
Yeah, that's good.
Legally Blonde 3, Mindy Kaling's currently writing it, so we'll see.
Is that true, or are you making a joke?
No, that's true.
Okay, cool.
But it could also be making a joke, but it is...
Okay.
At least true.
All right. What was the most realistic thing?
Oh, yes. Awards. Awards.
That happened in this movie.
There's a lot. I mean, the law school stuff was super, super accurate, but I would say the law students were the most accurate.
The personalities, Stephen Hawking stole my dissertation from fourth grade. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think they got that the most right.
I feel like the Socratic method was really spot on. The study group thing was pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, the most unrealistic.
There's a lot to like about the law school stuff. So what do you think they got most wrong?
Well, about law school, I would say the dorms situation. The fact that, everyone lived in a big dorm building was crazy. The criminal case, just every single thing was wrong. There wasn't anything right about it.
Yeah, the whole last half hour is totally wrong.
Yeah.
That would be my vote. For law school, if it's not going to be the dorms, I would say the law they talked about in the law school classes, like getting the case wrong, getting like pretending that saying you need evidence for a case is like some brilliant answer for something.
Right.
Those sorts of things are wrong. What did you think was the most unethical thing that happened?
Oof. Well, okay. Like L representing this client is the most unethical thing that happened, I think, hands down, because she's not qualified to do so. It's illegal. Like, if we're living in a world even when that law says that a 1L can represent a murder defendant halfway through a trial,
right,
she's not qualified at all to do so. And that's extremely unethical.
Yeah. I'm going to accept, I think we can all agree, the sexual harassment of lawyer to law student is that's...
That's not a law ethics issue. That's just like a human being ethics issue.
I would say... Yeah, I guess I would say the representation. I would go...
I mean, there's the UPL when she goes and gets the dog, which isn't great.
Yeah, let's go with that. Let's do with that.
Yeah,
let's
that was
do
the other thing I was thinking
L pretending
about
to be a lawyer. That's a good one.
Yeah.
I like that. And then I have one just specifically for this movie.
Yeah.
An award that is Legally Blonde only.
Yeah.
What was, in your opinion, the best law school hypothetical?
It's the sperm thing. It's got to be the sperm
thing. Yeah, got to be the sperm.
I don't know if you want to do best lawyer and worst lawyer, but I think it's fairly obvious that Emmett's the best lawyer in this movie.
Emmett is the best lawyer in this movie, and Elle is the worst?
I don't know, she's not a lawyer, so we can't... Callahan's the worst. Think of that one cross-examination question.
Yeah, you're
for
right.
For the guy
no, Callahan's the worst.
That the defendant was having an affair with.
There's only two lawyers in the movie, really.
That's true.
Besides the DA.
That's true.
So, I mean, honestly, the judge is technically still a lawyer. The judge may have.
You know what? The judge is worse than Callahan for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
So,
yeah.
We'll go with the judge for worst lawyer.
Yeah.
Emmett seems he's got his shit together. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and what a big romance man. What a great he just supports her, and he's just so he's just so encouraging, and just so
that's just prime Luke Wilson too.
He doesn't judge her, you know.
That's Luke before Luke went a little weird off the rails.
I don't know what you're talking about.
did you appreciate the nod making fun of Owen Wilson? Did you like that?
I didn't notice.
I thought that aged well.
What are we talking about?
Oh, come on! When they're in the car and she's like,
"Oh,
wait,
you look good as a blonde."
I wouldn't look. What do you think I'd look like as a blonde? And then she
I never even associated that with Owen Wilson. That's great.
So,
all right.
Love this movie. Fantastic. What do we got up next?
We've been talking about McConaughey lawyering a lot on the podcast.
I'll tell you what. Let's do McConaughey. Let's. It's time to dip a toe into McConaughey.
Okay.
It's a.
I
deep
love
bench.
Dipping toes into McConaughey. That's one of my favorite things.
So we are going to...
You want to do a Time to Kill?
We're going to take a trip down south.
We're going to do
some
sweaty.
Very,
sweaty.
Very sweaty. Oliver Platt, sweaty law. We're going to have a lot.
Platt does practice sweaty law wherever he goes. You're right.
We are going to really get into the nitty gritty of trying cases... criminal cases in areas that inexplicably do not have air conditioning.
Yeah, and also cheating on Charlize Theron with Sandra Bullock.
I don't know how many times I got to tell you it's not Charlize Theron.
It is. Is it not?
It is not. It is not. And I'm not going to tell you who it is.
Oh, God. Damn.
But it is not Charlize Theron.
It is. My brain can't do it. It just is.
She is going to be the lead in another movie that we have to do because people don't understand what Jeopardy is.
No, that's What's-Her-Face. That's Ashley Judd.
I know.
Oh, I thought you were...
There we go.
Is she or is she not blonde, though? Is she blonde in it? She's blonde, right?
She is, yes.
And then Charlize is in The Devil's Advocate.
Yes.
With the same haircut.
I do not deny both the glory of the ladies and the haircuts that they have, but they are not the same person.
All right, okay, you can find us at Movie Briefs Pod on Twitter. Is that right?
That was very confident and very true. Yes.
Okay, Movie Briefs Pod on Instagram. We are moviebriefspod@gmail.com. So
yes,
send us your questions, concerns, and comments about this show and also Time to Kill. And
oh, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review Apple Podcasts or wherever you're finding your podcasts.
Hey guys, if you have questions and comments about this podcast, don't comment on Heaving Bosoms. Comment on Movie Briefs. That's how people are going to find us. Don't come at me in my other podcast Facebook group and say, what about this movie? Do it in Movie Briefs, and then people will think people are listening to the show.
By the way, same with Cigarette Burns. I would love the interaction, but yeah, go through Movie Briefs.
This is its own thing. All right.
Yes.
Okay.
So.
All right.
All right, guys. Guess we're in recess.
We're in recess. Gavel.